titled Norfolk Miracle, Destination Freedom tells the unusual story of singer Dorothy Maynor. There was a girl who sang that way in the bay city of Norfolk down in Virginia. Church songs and old harmonies she'd learned in her father's church. Only for years, she sang only in the silent halls of her mind. And when the Reverend Elijah Maynor had to help his two daughters decide their careers, he thought of the music he'd heard from daughter Marion and said,
Marion, I knew from the day you found your voice what you wanted to do with it.
What, Dad?
Sing. You're the best in Norfolk.
Oh.
Oh, no, I'm serious now. I know we haven't much money, but I'm sending you up to New York to one of them fancy voice training studios. You've got to keep singing.
All right, Father.
Good girl. Oh, I've been blessed with two good girls. One obedient and talented. The other obedient. Dorothy?
Yes, Father?
Why aren't you up here? You know I wanted to have a private talk with you and your sister.
I was going to do some sewing for Uncle Bethel. You sent me over there.
Yes. You sew as well as your sister sings. Maybe better.
I do?
I was right in raising you for useful work. I was just telling Marion here that because of that marvelous voice people talk so much about round Norfolk, she's just got to be the one to study singing. Don't you agree, Dorothy?
Yes.
Good. Now, there's not much money, but what we've got will go to develop Marion's amazing voice. Of course, you've done as much work singing in my choir as anybody, Dorothy. In fact, some say you sing more to yourself than you sing anywhere else. but that kind of singing can't be judged. Now, I've looked over a number of things I think you'd be good at. You've displayed excellent taste for cooking. And, of course, there's your sewing. That's the thing that's brought in the extra money we've needed. And then there's washing. Dorothy? You listening?
Huh? Oh, yes, Father.
Yes. There's real need for cooks. What's more, the finest home economics school in the country is right up there at Hampton Institute. Same place Booker T. Washington got his training. You'll go there. Now, I've spoken to Miss Curtis, the dean.
You have?
Oh, yes. Dorothy, I want you to let nothing keep you from becoming the finest cook in Norfolk. In fact, advance to where you can teach others the great womanly art. In fact...
Father.
Yes?
I think it's time I finished sewing for Uncle Bethel.
Oh, yes. So it is.
I'll go now.
Good. But get up early in the morning and go over to Hampton. Dean Curtis is expecting you.
All right, Father. Early in the morning.
She walked out with a troubled song in her head. Before she'd finished the day's sewing, her uncle had caught the tune of it and understood why her lips quivered as she sewed.
Stop a minute, girl. Look up. So you won't study music after all?
No.
Yes. I've heard you singing all your life. And I'd swear your voice has a glory like no one else's. Sometimes I agree with your father.
I know.
But this ain't one of them. Child, there's silver bells in your throat. Tell you what. Go to the Institute tomorrow and register. But register for singing. A year's training, and even the deaf will be able to judge your voice right. Just register for music. Believe me, you've got silver bells in your throat.
The The girl listened to her uncle and listened to the bells that rang in her throat. And when she came to the dean at the institute, she pondered a long time while the line of students melted in front of her.
Minister Maynard's daughter, Dorothy?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm glad to meet the sister of that fine singing prodigy. Marion has a marvelous voice.
Yes, she has.
And just what courses are you registering for?
Well, I... Home economics.
I knew cooking was in your mind. I just knew it. Now fill out these forms and you're registered.
She registered and studied cooking and sewing until out of loneliness she would walk through the Virginia woods on the long, long trip to school. When she was sure she was alone, she'd imagine she was surrounded by a choral group and would sing.
Say, kid!
Huh? Oh, what?
Hey, you're the one that's been haunting the woods with that voice?
Say,
we need a voice like that. Tell you what you do. Go tell the choir director to give you a tryout, huh? Well, ain't you willing?
Oh, she was willing. The choir director noticed her record in the cooking and sewing classes and said,
we still need cooks. Singers are a dime a dozen. You're doing all right now. Stay put.
But I'd just like to try out.
All right. Try it, my dear. But we've got singers here better than most of those singing on the concert stages. But if your mind's set on it, you can try.
And she tried. The answer came weeks later. While she worked over the dress patterns, the choir director came to report.
Now, quiet, girls. Quiet. I'll read off the names of those who have passed the choir tryouts. Ida Wentforth, Maxine Fleming, Rose Vaughn, Sally Pruitt.
She listened to a long line of names. And when it was over, she went back to her sewing and waited for her chance to sing again. Then one day, the registrar came to her and said,
Miss Maynard, they want you to join the drama club. You're eligible, you know. Yes, it's going to be quite a show. They're giving a new musical this season.
Oh, at last I'll sing.
Sing? Well, not quite. You see, they need you backstage. You're such a good seamstress that... Well, they need someone to sew costumes for the cast. It's quite an honor, Miss Maynard.
She took tape measure and pins and tried to still the silver-tongued singing that went on in her mind. She waited for the day to come when someone would discover her voice. And a day came when the registrar reported.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. You've heard what happened to one of the members of the cast, the leading lady.
No.
She's eloped. And we need someone who can sing.
Well, I saw that.
I know, my dear. You've worked hard here with these costumes, and you'd like your chance on the stage.
Well, to tell the truth, I have been practicing.
Yes, I'm sure you have. And don't think you're not going to get your chance. The story, you know, is the Pied Piper.
Oh, I know the score.
You won't need to bother about the score. You're 4 feet 8 inches tall, Dorothy. Part would fit you best would be one of the little boys in the cast. Yes, we'll just look around for a lead.
They looked. While the girl with the silver voice sewed costumes for school productions. And when someone was sick, she'd appear on stage with a basket or a spear. Until the call came one evening from Nathaniel Dett, the head of the music department.
Miss Maynard.
Yes?
You've got to help us. The department's in a fix.
What's happened?
Well, each year, we are invited up to Carnegie Hall to give a concert with our choir.
Yes and no.
Well, this year, our soprano, Miss Benjamin...
Oh, I've heard her sing.
Well, she can't sing anymore. She'll recover. But, we'll have to find a substitute. And I thought you might recommend someone.
Well, I could.
You see, I've heard that the folks in Norfolk have an amazing amount of respect for your judgment.
Well,
I thought, well, you scout around and just bring every soprano you feel would have a chance in an audition.
Oh, I see.
I knew you would. You know, you've done some pretty good singing around Hampton yourself, they tell me. And you can judge a good voice when you hear it. Get me the best voices in Virginia.
And so it was that the best voice in Norfolk went about the state judging other voices and bringing one after another into Hampton for the Carnegie auditions. The instructor said,
I said soprano, Miss Maynor. Find sopranos, not foghorns. Can't you find someone?
And she brought in more voices.
There's not one who can qualify. Find me a singer.
And as the time neared for the concert, there were no singers who had the range. Finally, the director said,
Are you sure you brought in everyone you could find?
I didn't miss a one.
What about yourself?
Well, I didn't because, well, I'm...
You've done some singing.
Alto.
Oh. Well, you know, sometimes it seems your voice is more soprano.
Oh, but I've never sung soprano.
Well, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I thought I'd missed someone. So, if you'd oblige me, Miss Maynor, you needn't strain yourself, but it'll put my mind at ease if I know I've heard everyone. Will you do that for me?
Yes. Yes, I'll do it.
She did it. She went to the stage, and without a tremble, raised her alto to a silver bell and sang. When the bells quieted down, the director said,
I don't know what kind of a joke you've been trying to play on me, woman.
Why?
Causing me to have heart failure when all the time you sing as though you were born
but
to it.
You've heard me sing before. Everyone has. They've never noticed.
Yes, it's like that sometimes. Some people have ears but can't hear until it's been pointed out to them. I can hear now. You are the soloist for Carnegie Hall.
She joined the choir and sang in New York. Then she went back to the industrial school for the final semester.
What subjects this year, Dorothy?
Home economics.
Oh, that was last year.
Home economics?
Well, it says here, music.
Where?
This note here. Someone in New York heard you sing and sent down money for you to finish your studies in the music department. See?
Oh, I see.
Someone had felt the vibrations that charged the air when she sang. Thereafter at Hampton, through the winter season, the folks around Norfolk began strolling over the campus to listen to their discovery. Then the dean listened and made a decision.
Young woman, you can sing down here until your voice is gone. And nobody in the world will ever know they've missed the sensation of our time.
You don't want me here?
I don't want you buried. I want you to go to New York and study, and enter every contest there is until you're recognized. You haven't any money to do it. Neither have I. But I'm taking half of my salary and sending you out of Norfolk. It's not enough, but it'll have to do until the world's opened its ears to hear you.
Oh, how can I repay you?
By sticking it out until they listen.
The girl went to New York, and for 3 years, on the thin budget from the teacher's salary, she worked like a convict on a chain gang. Studied every type of soprano, dramatic, lyric, coloratura. Learned to glide from one register into another, to run the gamut from Wagnerian cymbals to Verdi bells. When she was ready, she went to audition for a national contest. The judges examined her.
Now, we don't want to discourage you, but the record shows you haven't had much experience. And, well,
He's trying to say that there's a well-known concern sponsoring the contest, and, they want singers who have, well, what they call commercial potentialities.
You mean I'm not to enter?
No, it's not that. It's just that it would be a waste of your time.
I'm willing to give my time. Can I have yours?
Well, Higgins, it's all right with me. You, Arab Bloom?
Yes, me too. You, Booker?
Yes. And you, Cook?
It was all right with the judges. The soprano stepped on stage, let loose the silver bells, and unleashed the bird in her throat. Judges huddled together and marked their ballots, and she returned to wait the verdict.
Due to circumstances which should have been explained to you earlier, you've been disqualified. Your entry fee will be returned.
She took back the fee and went over to thank the judges for their time.
I don't know how this could... Miss Maynard, it was a pleasure for me to listen to you. Sorry you didn't win. I gave you first place on my ballot, You, Higgins?
Yes, I did too. Some of the other judges must have been deaf.
Yes.
And you, Judge Airbloom?
Hey, me too. You, Booker?
Oh, I gave her first. I wonder, who disqualified you?
I wonder, how did the sponsor vote?
The judges looked for the answer on the floor. She walked from the contest chambers and remembered the teacher in Norfolk who had gambled half her salary on the victory of her voice. And she went through one contest after another, and won none. Then she took a job in a little Brooklyn church where she could work with the choir and sing in the evenings. And in those evenings, the laundry workers and cab drivers, hod carriers and housewives, steel workers and pile drivers would gather to listen to her and leave refreshed. There was a pile driver from Hampton who talked to his crew while he worked.
Well, I'm telling you guys, I've been knowing that girl up at church since she first started to sing.
You hear him, Willie? He knows the bird that chirps for us at church.
That's right.
There just ain't a single living back driver, don't know.
Yeah? And I'm telling you, I was one of the first to tell her she had a voice.
Oh, and naturally, hearing them authentic words from a sledgehammer tosking nanny, she took heed, and that's why she's here today.
No, ain't nothing like that. But I've been thinking about her voice up there.
Nothing but a voice?
Nothing but the voice. And look, I've been thinking, how'd it sound with an all-male choir behind it? I heard her sing that way once down in Norfolk.
You don't say.
I do. She's been having trouble getting an audience, she says. Say, suppose we got up a male choir for her, just for background stuff, you know, and let her ring that silver tone over it. How'd that sound?
Sounds like you're loafing. Now, dry them spikes, you guys.
Okay.
Drive them in.
The spikes were driven in, but an idea had gone home. That evening, the driver spoke to Dorothy about it.
It's a wonderful idea.
Oh, good. Glad you like it.
See, you go around to some of these music schools, see, and pick out a good group of men singers.
Yeah, that's sure. All. Go ahead.
I'd like to get the best kind of male voice.
Well, sure. Like I say, go to some studio, see, and pick out some men.
I'd like to start my choir with your voices.
Huh? Oh, well, we can't sing.
I like the way working men sing, and they'll be my choir.
She started her choir with five sledgehammer artists and went around Brooklyn looking for five voices more. She scoured the east side of Brooklyn and picked up two coal hikers whose deep vibrations she heard above their coal shovels. She went into the busy market and heard a vegetable man singing his wares. She took the vegetable man back to church, and with the ice man and a chauffeur and coal hikers, she spent the evenings blending their voices into a single unit, and with effortless ease matched her voice with theirs.
Oh.
they made records of spirituals and work songs. Records that raced ahead of the singers and found a place in a million homes. Records that brought in critics and requests. One day brought in an agency.
I'm Evans of Evans and Salter. I don't know how you've managed to conceal your voice from the concert audiences for so long, but I'm here to take you to a director who I believe will make sure the world hears it.
And over in the Berkshire Hills, where the Boston Symphony Orchestra was rehearsing for its annual festival, conductor Serge Koussevitzky was annoyed at an interruption.
My friend, if I audition any singer now in the midst of my rehearsal, you know what to expect. You tried this before. Always a new discovery, a new discovery.
But this time...
It'll be like the last time. I throw them out.
If, after you hear, you feel that way...
I'll feel that way. But bring her in. Hurry.
Oh, thank you, maestro.
Mr. Evans brought in his new discovery. And while some orchestra members yawned and strolled about the lawn, some were left to accompany her. She trembled in the cold air. But her voice was rich and warm. Of the silver bells, when she finished, the entire orchestra was standing applauding, and the conductor said,
"It's a miracle, a musical revelation. The world must hear your voice. The world must hear it."
The conductor listened again and again and told the musical world about her. Inside the span of a decade, the girl from Norfolk with the silver tone and the bird in her throat had been heard and cheered across the six continents. And the world is still cheering.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Norfolk Miracle, the story of Dorothy Maynor. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced by Homer Heck and directed by Dick Loughran. The story of Dorothy Maynor was played by Weslin Tilden. Others in the cast were Louise Pruitt, Oscar Brown Jr., Dean Almquist, Russ Reed, Fred Pinkard, and Bob McKee. Special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Records were produced by Larry Auerbach. This is Charles Mountain inviting you to join us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell the story of the legendary figure, Stack Ali. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.